Ryan made the introductions, explaining the usual story they used. They'd been traveling around the Deathlands looking for any sort of work, leaving the suggestion that the work might have some connection with hired guns.
Our wag broke down 5 days ago. Gearbox just about dropped onto the highway. Been walking since.
He had the feeling that the woman on the horse, looking down at him with a cool disdain, didn't believe a word of it. But oddly, it didn't seem to matter.
Very well, Carter. My name is Marie Mandeville. My father is the Baron Nathan Mandeville, and he owns Suncrest and all the land as far as you can see, to the west and to the north.
J.B. pointed behind the riders.
That the ville over that way?
Yes, Dix, it is.
It was bizarre that they were having a civilized conversation within 10 feet of the stiffening corpse of a hunted man, butchered in as brutal a manner as Ryan had ever witnessed. There was a long silence.
Well?
Marie lifted her head, glanced at the four young men with her, and silenced their whispering.
How dare you speak to me that way? My father is a baron of considerable wealth and power.
That's good for you, lady. Doesn't impress me all that much. Guess he eats and shits just like I do. Like he did.
Ryan pointed at the body.
This person broke a number of rules and was legally tried, sentenced, and executed.
Sure. Now you want us to come with you or go our own way? Just tell me.
Ryan could almost hear the wheels spinning in what he figured was a sharp little brain.
Oh, well, my father's always looking for a way to relieve the monotony. Outlanders like you and your companions might inspire him. Come, and be our guests.
Ryan glanced around at the others. None of them showed any great enthusiasm for the idea, but none of them showed any marked resistance either.
Deal.
Four of the Sekhmen reluctantly gave up their mounts, trudging disconsolately along behind the hunting party. Ryan rode with Dean perched in front of him. Mildred and Christy doubled on a tall gelding. Michael clung on with extreme unhappiness, his arms locked tight around JB's waist. And Doc rode in solitary splendor on a fine Appaloosa, grinning back at the four dismounted guards.
The story of warfare through the ages, Ryan. Cavalry never much cared for ending up with the poor bloody infantry.
Once they were en route for the Ville of Suncrest, Marie Mandeville virtually ignored them, riding ostentatiously at the front of the column, surrounded by the quartet of sycophantic and elegant young men. The trail was well marked, though it occasionally narrowed among the trees, forcing them into a meandering single file. But most of the time it was possible to ride in pairs or threes. Ryan found himself alongside the most senior of the Sekhmen, a grizzled veteran with 3 golden stripes on his sleeve.
Name's Harry Gatow. I think I've seen you someplace before, Carter.
Could be. I've been many places. Looks like they could be true for you as well.
The man nodded. His left cheek was badly scarred, as though he'd once been on the wrong end of a charge of buckshot, and 2 fingers were missing from his left hand. He noticed Ryan appraising him.
The hand was a woman. Pug Papa, up in the High Plains. I was 16 years old and drunker than a skunk. The pain woke me up, but she got away. I always wondered what it was that I'd done to make her so sore.
How about the mark on your face?
I rode a time with Gert Wolfram.
Ryan glanced around to see if JB had picked up on the notorious name from their joint past, but the armorer was arguing with Michael about not holding on so tightly.
You knew him?
No. Know the name, though. Used to run a kind of muty freak show around some of the northern pest holes. Must be 10 or 15 years ago. Maybe longer.
They were moving steadily down a gentle slope, with clumps of stately cottonwoods on both sides of the trail. Somewhere, not far ahead, Ryan could hear the sound of fast-flowing water. The sun was sinking rapidly, and the shadows clustered more closely around the riders. Gatow heeled his mount to a narrow gap between a pile of jumbled stone and a fallen pine. He gestured with his thumb at the ruin.
That used to be a vacation cabin. Some vid star. Locals say she topped herself at the straight razor when her tape stopped selling. Supposed to be triple famous. Can't remember what she was called.
How long before we reached the ville?
An hour. Got across the south fork of the Antelope. Had some rain lately, so it's up at the fort. I've sure as shit seen you before. You was saying about Gert Wolfram?
No. You said you rode with him. I said I'd heard the name before. Years before.
The sergeant had a chew of tobacco in his cheek, and he loosed a thin stream of dark liquid onto the trail.
Yeah, that's right. Your kid asked me about this.
He touched the deep scar tissue that disfigured his cheek, tugging the corner of his mouth up into a perpetual corkish grin.
Shotgun?
Yeah. One of Gurk Wolfram's fucking star attractions done it to me.
Beauty?
That's right, Carter. Kind of half-breed. Sticky mother and a swampy father. At least that was the story.
Bad mix.
Now the noise of the river was growing much louder, making it a bit more difficult to hear the sergeant's story. But Ryan wanted him to keep on talking, so Gateau would lose interest in whether or not the sergeant might have seen him. There were places with long memories where the traitor and his people were concerned, places that had encountered the Iron Fist inside the Iron Glove.
Bastard got hold of a sawed-off. Wolfram used it in part of his show, only loaded with rock salt. Fired it at the muties when they pretended to attack him from right across the cage. Of course, it made hell of a bang, but it didn't do no harm. Not at that range from a sawed-off. This mutie had a woman, and I was younger, and I'd have fucked anything that didn't have hooves. The fact is, even that's not totally true. Long nights out riding the lines, and that little sheep starts looking about the prettiest thing you ever... But that's not the point.
Now Ryan could glimpse the river ahead of them, about 80 feet across. Upstream, the water was swollen, dark and deep, tinted crimson by the setting sun. Below the point of the shallow crossing was a long run of menacing rapids, white water over jagged stone. Behind them, Doc was having increasing trouble in controlling his horse. Gateau turned in his saddle, and his grin widened.
That Comanche's a vicious sun-bucking star-fishing bastard. The old man best watch her across the ford.
Dean leaned half off the back of his horse.
What about the mutie and the shotgun?
Oh, it weren't nothing. When he seen the body of the woman, I didn't mean to, but I was wild back then. That night he decked old Gert and grabbed the scattergun. Might have been salt, but it nearly took my fucking head right off my shoulders, kid. Hurt like a bastard.
You killed him after?
No.
No?
No, not after. Killed him right then and there. Broke his neck. Then passed out. Wolfram said it got the biggest cheer he ever heard from an audience. When I got better, he wanted to try and work it into a regular sort of an act. That was when him and me parted company. Well, here we are at the Antelope. Let's make sure that Mistress Marie gets over without her pretty little boots getting splashed.
Everyone reined in, and Gateau spurred on to the front. Dean nudged his father.
He seems kind of all right, Dad.
Yeah? Seems to me to be one of the coldest-hearted bastards I ever saw.
Gateau came back to rejoin Ryan.
I've taken a look, and there's a shitload of water going down the pike right now. I suggested to Mistress Marie that we go a few miles upstream where there's an old stone bridge across the Antelope.
Ryan smiled at the expression on the sergeant's face.
And she didn't warm to that idea?
You're all right, Carter. No, you could say she didn't take to this suggestion.
So?
She ordered Lamar to go first.
Who is he? All four of them look like preening pretty boys. Are they...
One thing you'd best learn right here and now, Carter. Worst enemy a man can have at Suncrest is Mistress Marie. Sure, Baron Nathan runs things tighter than a beaver's ass, but you know where you are with him. Word gets back to her that someone spoke wrong or looked wrong, and they do well to swallow their Armalite.
I get it.
No, you don't, Carter. You think that you've talked to me, and you and me are a lot alike. Sure we are. I can judge a man, and you and me ridden a lot of the same trails. That don't mean I'd piss on you if you were burning to death, understand me? I ride for the Baron, and all that means.
Sure, Gato, I understand.
Be sure you do. I know I've seen you before, but it's so long ago. This scar of mine makes folks remember me. Same with that lost eye of yours. How did you lose it?
The stoop way, taking a rabbit from a snare. Wasn't dead. Kicked back and popped my eye out of its socket as neat as any doctor's knife.
Good one, Carter. Nearly as good as my waking up to find my fingers missing. Only good part of that was she didn't slice off my dick.
The man called Lamar had finally succeeded in getting his mouth across the Antelope, with much splashing and squeakings of alarm. He now sat on the far side of the ford with a complacent grin on his soft, vacant face. Marie didn't hesitate for a moment. In went the spurs, and the horse shot forward in a clumsy, spread-legged leap. For a moment, Ryan thought that the woman had lost it as she vanished in a welter of brown spray. But it was no surprise to see her emerge, hair dripping wet, cresting the river, and emerging alongside Lamar. Her face showed no sign of any emotion as her eyes locked on Ryan. Doc was close to Ryan, still battling his stubborn horse.
By the Greek Kennedys! I would rather make a dozen Matrans jumps than face this, Ryan.
You'll be fine, Doc. Look, I'll come in with you. Get alongside, and then if anything happens, you can leap off and hang on with me.
Doc managed a smile that was more a rictus of trepidation.
The graveyards of history are littered with those poor souls who were persuaded to change horses in midstream, my dear fellow. And you want me to do the same?
Just in case. Come on, everyone's going for it.
The hunting party began the fording of the South Fork of the Antelope. One of the Sekhmen nearly lost it as his gelding stumbled, going clean underwater. But the man was good, staying with the horse, rising with his arms clasped tight around its dripping neck. He eventually made it to the far shore, amid a chorus of ironic cheers. Gateau had remained with the outlanders, possibly to make sure that nobody changed their mind about accepting the invitation from the chatelaine of the Ville of Suncrest.
Over you go!
Harry's finger was not all that far from the trigger of the armor light. Christy went first, Mildred holding her around the waist, followed by J.B. and Michael. Ryan watched anxiously, but both horses were strong and had no trouble with the crossing. Now there was only Ryan, with Dean at his back, Doc, and Sergeant Gateau, who shook his head at the worried look on the old man's face.
I'll lead your horse, and you can swing off and grab on my stirrup. I'll drag you over safe.
Safe, perhaps, my good fellow. But with some concomitant loss of my precious dignity. No, I shall pay the price to live with myself on my own terms. Come on!
He went so fast that Ryan was taken by surprise, heeling his own horse in a little behind the frothing wake of the spirited Appaloosa.
Hold on tight, team!
And then the cold water was foaming around Ryan's thighs, the horse bucking and rolling as it fought desperately for a footing in shifting stones. Ryan was aware of Gateau, pushing confidently along a little to his rear, holding the armalite above his head in his mutilated left hand. The danger was very real, with the Sawtooth Rapids only a few yards to their right, but it was exciting, and Dean slapped their horse on the flank with the flat of his hand.
Don't let go!
Ryan half turned in the saddle, in time to see the threatened disaster become a reality. It might have been that Doc's horse was already nervous of the surging water, or it might have been the old man's own fear communicating itself to the animal. The reason didn't matter. Ryan saw the mount rear, as though it scented danger. Doc's cracked boots slipped from the irons, and he went over backward, vanishing under the dark river. The horse recovered its balance and galloped out onto the opposite bank, where it stood trembling. But Doc hadn't surfaced. Ryan caught a fleeting glimpse of a clenched fist breaking through the white fog at the brink of the rapids. Then, it disappeared. Ryan's first impulse was to go straight in after the old-timer, but his combat reflexes saved him from what could have been a suicidally foolish move. If he dove off the back of the horse, the Steyr rifle on a sling around his shoulder could snag and drown him. It would also leave Dean perched on the withers of the animal, with no hope of controlling it or reaching the safety of the shore. Ryan reached behind and grabbed the boy's arm.
Take the reins! Watch out for him, Gateau!
Ryan unslung the rifle as his boots slipped from the left stirrup, his legs swinging over the pommel. He threw the rifle to the Sekhmen, not even waiting to see if he caught it clean. The raw power of the river as it surged along the valley astonished Ryan. For a fraction of a moment, he recalled one of his earliest times with a trader. Not far from Four Corners, some renegade jolt peddlers had set up a gaudy in the White House ruins at the bottom of the sacred Canyon de Chelly, and Trader had been paid by the Navajo to go down and scour them out. It had been an easy job. Swatting a few flies away had been Trader's description, but it meant descending the steep bluff opposite the shell of the Anasazi buildings and wading the river, all done on a moonless night. Oki had been scouting for Warwag 1 and reported the river wasn't too deep and not too fast. Ryan had been in charge of the cleansing party and had gone first. He could still remember his shock at the relentless gripping power of that river that had very nearly taken him by surprise, off balance, and dumped him on his ass. That memory flashed past as he hit the Antelope in a clumsy face-down dive. Icy water gushed up his nose and into his open mouth, making him choke and splutter. The next minute or two was a tumbling, helpless montage of mental and physical confusion. Something struck him a crunching blow in the small of the back, just above the kidneys. In odd moments, his head was above water and his eye was open, but he perceived only a blurred, darkening world. He had no hope of seeing Doc, or even knowing where he might be. All Ryan could do was to kick and push himself with the current, figuring that this might be his only chance of catching up with the old-timer. His right arm wedged between two boulders, stopping him with such a wrench that he feared his shoulder might have been dislocated. But he was able to free himself. A large fish, scales glittering like a thousand rainbows, forced its way up the stream, passing Ryan as he rested a moment in a quiet stretch of the Antelope River, before another spinning rapid greeted him. The water buffeted and boiled, making Ryan lose all sense of direction and time. He might have been in the river for 15 seconds or 15 minutes, traveled a mere quarter mile or 5 miles. He experienced a drop so deep that Ryan became disoriented, not even knowing which was air and which was the grinding cold of the river bottom. His outstretched hand touched wet cloth. He kicked with all of his might, erupting out of the river like Neptune from the ocean, shaking water from his eye and looking all around. He noticed something white, like torn linen. Ryan vanished again. Ryan saw Dean, perched on a jutting rock, his finger pointing to Ryan's left. Ryan looked again, spotting the patch of white, able to see now that it was Doc Tanner's hair. Plunging for it, his arm at full stretch, he felt the brush of clothing against his fingers again, snatching it, losing, holding once more. Ryan found himself pushed up against a large wall of sheer rock as slick as ice. He managed to brace his boots and power away, keeping hold of Doc's coat, heaving him out of the main flood of the Antelope toward the quieter shallows. It was as though a deafening noise had been suddenly made still. There was a gentle slope of gray boulders, with Bean and Christy to help him. He saw the anxious face of JB, who furiously wiped spray from his spectacles as he peered down from the bank to see if all was well. Ryan lay on his back, his feet still trailing in the gentle water, fighting for breath, becoming conscious of the numerous bruises and scratches that he'd suffered during the rescue.
How is he?
He sat up to see the worrying sight of Doc, his arms spread, his face like ivory, with a livid bruise across his right cheek, lying quite motionless alongside him. Christy kneeled by Doc, reaching into his open mouth and pulling out sand and strands of weed, making sure his tongue was free of the air passage.
Want a hand, Lady Outlander?
For a moment, Ryan wondered whose voice it was. Then he remembered Gitteau and the woman with black hair and the nearby Bill, and the butchered fugitive in the clearing.
No.
Christy was intent on what she was doing, pinching Doc's nose and breathing deeply into his mouth.
JB, come and press on his chest when I tell you.
Ryan sat up, finding that the sergeant was now at his side, steadying him with a hand.
Mistress Marie was impressed, Carter.
I couldn't fucking care less whether she approves of what I did or not.
Maybe it could mean more than you know.
How's that?
Careless talk can get you chilled. Fancy a drop of a warming cordial?
Sure.
The sec man produced a small glass flask, bound in silver and leather, with a screw top. It was beautifully made by the hand of a craftsman, and was part filled with a scented, fiery liqueur that Ryan didn't recognize. But it flowed down his throat and into his stomach, carrying its heat to every part of Ryan's body.
Thanks.
He handed back the flask.
You collect pre-darkies like this?
No. Baron does. Sometimes he gives a present to someone if he's pleased with them. Gave me this for chilling an assassin a couple of years back. Hunched back half-breed, hopped about like a bottled spider. Looks like your friend is recovering. I thought that was well done, Carter.
Take it easy. Just lie still a while, Doc. We're close to the last train to the post.
I blame Master Carter for his foolish, lack-brained advice for me to change my horse in the middle of a stream.
Sorry about that, Doc.
By the soggy and disordered state of your clothing, I draw the deduction that, once again, I owe you my life. Do I?
Yeah, sort of, Doc.